there. It's Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett. Got a guest today. I'm going to give this a chance to kind of smooth into the background here with the music. Going to be talking about free. Free. What is free? Well, we're going to find out in just a minute. Experiencer.org is the more common name for it, but free is a really fantastic and one of its kind group talking about consciousness and contact as an ET or non-corporeal or whatever it may be, because that's what this whole thing is trying to find out. Where are these encounters coming from? It's the Dr. Edgar Mitchell Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters. My guest today is Ray. And for people who want to connect with you, you just go by Ray, correct?
Correct.
All right. So Ray Hernandez. And he's going to give us the update on what's been happening. We've talked with Ray before, but I wanted to find out more as this has continued to develop and gain more, I guess, more awareness. You know, broad-based awareness, more people saying, oh, I've had an experience, and filling out the research. I wanted to find out how that's progressed, because for me, the one thing that I really like seeing is the commonalities in some of the encounters and the fact that it also includes paranormal, not just an ET thing. There's a whole lot more going on with this. And by doing this research, we have a chance to connect some dots. So, okay, where are we at in the research process?
Thank you, Wendy. We are just finishing. Well, let me backtrack. Our research study has four phases. The first two phases are comprised of quantitative questions, 600 quantitative questions. We have received over 3,300 responses for phase one and phase two. And these are in the English language and the Spanish language. In the Spanish language, we have received approximately 550. And the balance, I think it was 200, almost 700, 2,700 are in the English language. In the English language, we have received responses from over 85 countries. So this truly is an international study. Phase three is written responses to 70 open-ended questions. So right now, this is the qualitative portion where people are actually writing out the details to 70 questions. And we have received approximately 1,100 responses to phase three. Now, as each phase increases, the experiencer becomes, much more prolific. For example, the people that did phase two are the people that have had much greater experiences than phase one. The people that did phase three are now the big time experiencers. Finally, Free is going to be interviewing the top 100 cases for phase four. And this is our formal interviews.
The thing I experienced, because I did fill out the survey, these are intense surveys. This isn't just a real, you know, two or three questions. These are not only two or three questions, but then questions within the questions, and then point A, B, C, and D within those questions. And then this is pretty darn time consuming.
Yes, it's the reason for this, Wendy, is that we really are totally clueless as to what really is going on. You have in these UFO conferences and these paranormal conferences, hundreds of so-called experts, but yet these so-called experts have never done a comprehensive academic research study of this phenomenon. And what we're focusing on in this particular study is people that have both seen UFOs and have had contact with non-human intelligence. And as what you stated earlier, this is not an ET thing here. If I were to categorize it as anything, it's more of a paranormal type of experience, because people have physically seen beings, they've had telepathic communications, and they literally have had almost every type of paranormal experience happen to them. Just one example before we get into the details, 80% of these almost 3,200 individuals that have taken our research study, 80% have had an out-of-body experience. Now, when was the last time people associated out-of-body experiences with UFO-related contact? You know, never. And that's just an illustration.
Well, and that's what I think is helpful, because there's so much variety in these experiences. I've had several all across the board, things that could be called an ET or alien or whatever, but they also are labeled paranormal or consciousness, extraordinary encounters. It just, there, this helps give us some kind of a definition. And we realize there are so many more levels of this kind of encounter than I think most people realize.
Yes, yes, correct. We try not to use the term ET. Whenever we did use it, we defined it basically as non-human intelligence, no matter where the source is coming from. Secondly, as I stated before, no one has ever done this study before. You have all these people going to these UFO conferences, you know, making presentations about ET this, ET that, whatever. Yet much of what's being presented at these conferences, and certainly in the internet, we are totally contradicting the vast majority of the information that's being presented. And and that was the, well, let me just give you a background of how this project started. This project, this organization was co-founded by the late Dr. Edgar Mitchell. In addition, Dr. Rudy Shields, who is a 75-year-old emeritus professor of astrophysics at Harvard, is also another co-founder, and he is also our executive director. He's the chief here of our organization. And then the other co-founders are myself and Mary Rodwell, who is in her late 60s now. She has researched over 3,000 cases of people that have had UFO-related contact. And in my opinion, she's the world's leading expert, if you could use that term, on this phenomenon. We've also had other people who are very, very familiar with the arena, Dr. Leo Sprinkle, who's a retired professor of psychology. He was the first academic that actually began publishing articles on experiencers and abductees. We have Dr. John Klimo, and who is a co-chair of our research study. John is one of the world's leading academics on the paranormal. And he's in his mid-70s. I think he's 75 years old. We also have another retired professor who's the other co-chair. He's a retired professor of neuroscience. He's a brain doctor. But the reason he got involved in this was that he and his wife, while they were in Sedona, they saw these two huge UFOs doing these maneuvers in the sky. And all of a sudden, he got interested in this field. And then once he found out more about it, he joined us, and he learned that this is not just lights in the sky, analyzing photos and videos and things like that, that this is much, much more profound. And so both of them are the co-chairs of this research study. And so all the professors, I could name a few more, but I won't at this time, together with these non-academics, developed this research study for the first time to be able to properly document and understand the patterns of this phenomenon. And we never had that before.
And yeah, I agree. A lot of the information, instead of being, you know, all spooky and scary and frightening, and they're going to attack us any day, and they're already attacking us in our sleep and all this kind of stuff, it goes into the positive. And 85% of the experiencers, according to your research, have undergone major transformations for the positive, more spiritual, less egotistical, more concern for the environment, that kind of stuff. And I agree. It's a completely different than what is represented by the majority of the films that you see put out by the major industry.
And it's my opinion, it's a disinformation campaign, because once people truly find out what is really going on, it's not in the best interest for a lot of people to get that information out there. For example, if I can go over some of the data that we asked, let me just go over five questions on this whole issue of whether it's, you know, these experiences, are they positive, negative, neutral, or what have you. We asked this question, this is in phase two, so these are now the heavy-duty experiencers now. We asked them a question. If you could stop your ET contact experiences, would you? Okay. We had 1,144 people that answered this question. So this is not, you know, two or three or five people. 1,144 people. Out of those people, 83% no, don't make it stop. Keep it coming. So if these experiences were so negative, why would so many people not want their experiences to stop? We asked them a question: do you believe the ETs in general are bad, malevolent, or evil? 90% said no. We asked them a question: did your ET contact experiences change your life in a positive or a negative way? And they had several choices. Let's go with the most negative choice. Highly negative effect on changing your life, only 4.5%. Slightly negative effect in changing your life, 6.7%. It was a neutral experience. It didn't change me one way or the other, 17%. It was a slightly positive effect in changing your life, 21.5%. It was a highly positive effect in changing your life, 50%. So right there, we can see in terms of the change for the positive, almost 72% of these individuals stated that it positively changed their lives. Now, these are the questions for the people that have been abducted. OK, we don't like to use that word because of the negative connotations associated with it. But these are the people that have been taken from one location and relocated to another. And the vast majority of the cases, that it's not just being taken to a ship. Okay, people are being brought into a matrix reality. People are being brought into other planets, other locations. So it's not like the standard abduction information that you're seeing. So for those people that have been taken and relocated to another place, and we use the term abduction because that's a common term being used. So let's start with the most negative. Okay, we asked this question: how would you characterize your last few extraterrestrial encounter experiences? What are your beliefs now about your experiences? And let's start with the most negative. It was a case of abduction of the most negative kind, only 8.4%. It was a case of abduction, but a milder kind, a slightly more caring kind, 8.5%. It was still a case of abduction, but we're seeking permission. I was treated in a humane and compassionate way, 8.5%. Now, this is the total opposite now. You are not an abductee, but a contactee, where you're being treated with respect and understanding, 34.8%. It is a case of being a conscious contactee, an egalitarian, an equal relationship, again, 34.8%. The total amount of people that answered this question on abductions was 865 people. So as you can see right here, almost 71% of the people stated that they are a contactee, okay? Contactee. Mm-hmm. And for the people that were abducted, but the ETs sought their permission and they were treated in a very humane and a compassionate way, 8.4%. So right now we almost got 80%, 79%. Okay. Either a contactee or they asked for my permission. I was treated humanely and compassionate. Now, again, this is not stuff that's being circulated on the internet. Okay. Mm-hmm. This is done scientifically, systematically. And so just on this whole topic of positive, negative, and neutral, we have the total opposite of what's being circulated on the internet. Now, in our phase three, we asked them to detail why was it positive, negative, or neutral. And also in the interviews, which they're going to be starting in about a month, we're also going to be asking them to detail, you know, why they answered a certain way or another. So we'll be able actually to get specifics.
That's my question, because what I'm curious is about really is the ones who had the extreme negative reaction and their experience, was there a commonality? And I think that's what you might be able to find out with, as you continue with the research.
Yeah, we did find a couple of these commonalities for the negative aspect of it. One was that people are very upset because they weren't asked to go. You know, they were just taken. That's one aspect of it. The second thing is that a lot of these people were examined medically. You know, like when we tag, you know, seals or wolves or
a frog
or whatever, you know, people are being examined and they're being checked out, and they don't like that. Secondly, the physical features of these entities. If you see one of these grays right in front of you looking at your eyes, you're going to be traumatized for many, many years just because, you know, they're ugly looking, they're scary looking. I could go into the specific types of beings that people saw and how they responded to the different types of beings. meetings. That's very, very important to go over. But just the physicality of this experience, you know, can be quite traumatizing. But we also found out, we asked the question is, how were their experiences in the beginning? Like that question I asked, last one I stated was how would you categorize your most recent experiences? We also asked that question, how would you categorize your first few experiences? Now, out of those, 44% were perceived to be, 34% were perceived to be negative. So over the years, the experiences changed and their perception of the experiences changed. For example, I spoke with this one lady and she mentioned that in the beginning, she saw these experiences as negative. And I asked her why. She said, well, you know, in two of the experiences, I saw these human looking beings and it was a neutral experience. You know, it wasn't negative or positive. OK, but then in one experience, this little being, this little creature came to me and he was so scary looking. I said, well, did it do anything to you? You know, did it hurt you to physically, mm-hmm. you know, outside of the look? She says, no, he just looked real ugly. And she said, but now she says that she feels sorry because she knows that being telepathically perceived what she was thinking. And she's now ashamed that she actually thought this being was so ugly, you know. Uh-huh. So that's just an illustration of the change that goes from 34% perception of being negative to, you know, this 15% perception as being negative, which is a 20% drop. And that is after people have had time to digest it and to process these experiences. They then realize that, look, it wasn't that bad as I initially perceived it.
Well, and I guess my view of what the commonality would be, do these folks who've had a negative experience have a certain psychological or physiological aspect to them, such as a blood type or, you know, whatever their bioelectric signature might be? Does that distinguish them as worthy of being examined versus something else?
Yeah, we asked this question of the blood type because that's another hypotheses that's circulating all over the internet, that if you ever been abducted or if you ever had ET contact, then you are Rh negative. Well, we asked that question, and over 2,500 people responded to that question. And the results came back that only 15% of these individuals were Rh negative. And that's exactly the norm population in the U.S. for Rh negative.
I like that. That's a great debunker.
Yeah, correct. And so our study debunks almost a good majority of the information that's being circulated on the internet.
surprise! Yeah, right. Yeah,
surprise. Okay. Because no one has ever done this before, Wendy. You know?
Yeah.
The researchers suspected these things. Most of the researchers in our group that I've been working with experiences for over 30 years, they suspected these things, but they never had the data. You know, they said, well, approximately 20% of the people I've worked with, 30% of the people I've worked with, but they never had any data. Now we've got actual real hard data from thousands of people all over the world, from 85 countries in two languages. We're also going to be doing our study in German and in French in about a month. So that should give us some additional information from other languages as well.
Well, I like that. Mary Rodwell works with Australians, and that's where she started. And to me, she kind of picked up where John Mack left off and continued just asking questions and then cataloging the folks who she was able to have access to, their kinds of behavior changes. And she came up with this new human theory that we are changing and we're having some kind of an intervention. And I'm just paraphrasing this, that's helping to basically guide and direct that.
Well, we could go into the life changes inventory, how people have changed. I don't know if you're going to go into break now, or do we have maybe like 3 or 4 minutes?
Well, let me have Matt, let me know real quick. He does my time check. 7 minutes. So we've got time.
Okay, perfect. What we did is we copied questions from one of the few academic research studies of experiencers. It's a book by Dr. Kenneth Ring, and he's one of the world's, or probably the world's leading academic on near-death experiences. Mm-hmm. In 1988, he did a study where he compared 100 people that had near-death experiences with 100 people that had UFO-related contact experiences. And he mainly focused on was how these people changed. So we borrowed 70 of those questions, but I'm only going to be stating 19 of these. Okay. So the responses are either strongly increased somewhat, has not changed, decreased somewhat or strongly decreased. So let me state the question. My desire to help others, overwhelmingly, strongly increased. My compassion for others has strongly increased. My appreciation of the ordinary things of life, strongly increased. My concern with material things of life, strongly decreased.
Yeah.
My concern with spiritual matters, strongly increased. My interest in organized religion, strongly decreased. My desire to achieve a higher consciousness, strongly increased. My competitive tendencies have strongly decreased. My concern with the welfare of the planet Earth, strongly increased. My understanding of what life is about has strongly increased. My personal sense of purpose in life, strongly increased. My belief in a higher power, strongly increased. My sense that there is some inner meaning to my life, strongly increased. My fear of death, strongly decreased. My openness to the notion of reincarnation, strongly increased. My empathy with others, strongly increased. My concern with ecological matters, strongly increased. My conviction that there is life after death, strongly increased. So, my interest in achieving material success, in becoming wealthy, strongly decreased. So as you could see, this is several thousand people that answered this question. These individuals are being transformed one-on-one, okay, on an individual basis. It's a total psychological transformation of the experiencer for the positive, not the negative. So if these entities are so bad, so evil, why are they changing us to become much more better humans?
Oh, yeah. More empathic, more compassionate, more magnanimous, yes. You know, less self-absorbed. Yes. It's and it's nice to see that. But it's also, again, curious in terms of the agenda. That's something that I don't know that we're able to answer at this level.
We ask those questions, many of those questions. We ask those questions. But as I said before, we just have the data for phase one and phase two. Phase three will have a lot more detailed descriptive information. And in the interviews, we'll even have even more detailed descriptive information, because phase four is going to be the top 100 people. You know, the heavy, heavy duty experiencers that, you know, have had downloads, have had telepathic communications, both seen the ETs, have been relocated to another place, their family members, they've had paranormal experiences. So once we finish our study, we'll have a much, much better idea. But we have certain suspicions of what might be taking place at this point.
Well, part of it, I know in my own experience, at first I was thinking it was like a divine intervention, because this stuff was so incredibly powerful and able to be totally in tune with my experience on multiple levels, that I'm thinking, oh my, this is, I don't know how to explain it. But at the same time, when I've also had these other things that fall into this experiencer category, both that transcendent experience and the experiencer jargon all fit. And I was like, oh, this is so much bigger than what we have been able to speak or put words to at this point.
Yeah, maybe in the next session, I can go into some of these paranormal experiences, like the whole issue of healings, of near-death experiences, of out-of-body experiences, of telepathic communication, of downloads of science and advanced physics. That's information that the normal person that's in this, that researches this field is totally oblivious to. And we've actually got data from thousands of people, how they responded to these topic areas.
Okay. And we also want to mention that the documentary, that you're working right now on a documentary that will kind of get this information out to a broader audience. And so that's also basically in the working stages at this moment, right?
Yes. It's a documentary that will be able to explain the science and physics behind this phenomenon, because we have five PhD physicists in our organization and numerous other different types of PhDs. So we're going to be talking about, the whole Dr. Dean Radin, for example, the telepathic aspects of it, the physics aspects of it, the neurological aspects of it, et cetera, of that also the whole aspect of the quantum hologram theory of consciousness, which is developed by the late Dr. Edgar Mitchell and Dr. Rudy Shields, which explains that we live in a multidimensional reality, not just one universe, but multiple universes, and that within each of these different dimensions, they're literally, you know, filled with almost an infinite amount of conscious sentient beings. That's the hypotheses we're working on.
Okay, we're going to finish with more of this. I also want to bring up the WikiLeaks with John Podesta and the information that included a request from Edgar Mitchell for some FaceTime or at least some engagement from, I believe, the Hillary Clinton. And so this is something also I'm curious about where that might be going. We're talking, my guest is Ray Hernandez. He's part of the group that is trying to get some kind of content behind the topic of contact.
Okay, Simon, what are you wearing right now?
Nothing.
That's right. And what do people normally wear?
Clothes.
Exactly. So now Mommy's going to teach you how to dress yourself. Clothes keep us warm, they look good, and if we go out without them, the neighbors will talk. So it's important to know how to get dressed. Here's how it's done. Underwear always comes first, name tag at the back, then pants, then shirt. Get the first button in the right hole, or you have to start all over. If you're wearing a tie, it goes over, round, round, through, and pull tight. Tuck your shirt into your pants and zip up your flap. Socks go on first, then shoes, right on right, left on left. With shoelaces, just take the ends, cross them over, switch the loops, the rabbit goes down the hole, pull tight, and you're left with bunny ears.
I love bunnies.
Good to know. Now remember, spots don't go with stripes, socks don't go with sandals, and if you've tucked in your shirt, wear a belt. Got it? Why are your pants on your head?
Most parenting is hard to do in just 2 minutes. But spending just 2 minutes twice a day making sure they brush their teeth is easier and could help save them from a lifetime of tooth pain. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. That's 2min2x.org. A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ag Council.
Did you know that 7 in 10 girls believe they are not good enough or don't measure up in some way? I'm Amy Poehler. You may know me from film and television, but I'm also involved off-screen, encouraging young girls to be proud of who they are. Body image breakdowns and the pressure to be perfect often causes a girl's self-esteem to plummet. But by being positive role models, we can change that. The number one wish among girls is for their parents to communicate better with them, including more frequent and more open conversations. So get involved and start talking. Begin a conversation with a girl in your life about the importance of self-esteem. Tell her why she is beautiful and set an example by avoiding negative self-talk. You can make a difference in the lives of girls, and that is no laughing matter.
This message was brought to you by American Women in Radio and Television and was made possible through the generous support of the Dove Self-Esteem Fund, working together to raise self-esteem in girls everywhere. To learn more, go to campaignforrealbeauty.com. Thank you for making a difference.
Okay, what are you wearing right now?
Nothing.
That's right. So Mommy's going to teach you how to dress yourself. Underwear always comes first, name tag at the back, then pants, then shirt. Get the first button in the right hole or you have to start all over. Socks go on first, then shoes, right on right, left on left. With shoelaces, just take the ends, cross them over, switch the loops, the rabbit goes down the hole, pull tight, and you're left with bunny ears. Got it? Why are your pants on your head?
Most parenting is hard to do in just 2 minutes. But 2 minutes twice a day making sure they brush their teeth is easier, and it could help save them from a lifetime of tooth pain. Visit 2min2x.org to find out more. A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ag Council.
So, I'm a dog, and I just got adopted by this new human guy, and I'm starting to wonder how he got along without me. I mean, okay, something as simple as walking around the block. He's got this leash thing, and he puts me on one end and him on the other, and I'm just taking him around. I think he's afraid of getting lost. Without that leash and me guiding him along, I don't think he'd find his way back home. But it's kind of cute.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Hi there. Conscious Living and Power Radio. I'm Wendy Garrett. My guest today, Ray Hernandez. He's with an organization that's trying to give us some more information to what's going on behind these contact experiences. And maybe that's the best way to give you an overview for it. Experiencer.org, free. The Dr. Edgar Mitchell Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters is the name of the organization. And we were talking about some of the things that happen as a result of an experience or an encounter. And that's what's so fantastic about this. It isn't a question of whether you've had the encounter. It's a question of what is the result? Because those results pretty much indicate something happened and it made a very concrete change. Right, Ray?
Most definitely.
Okay, so the upshot, the good stuff that happens or has happened as a result.
Well, let me go over some of this data, at least some, just some of our findings. As I said before, we've had 600 questions. First of all, a lot of people associate UFO-related contact with abductions. What we found out was that only 32% of individuals that have had UFO sightings and have had contact with non-human intelligence have actually been abducted. 68% of these individuals have not been abducted. 450 people, this is as of August 1st, have conscious memories of being aboard a craft. We asked individuals to respond to our survey based only on conscious, explicit memories, not through hypnotic regression, not through lucid dreams, etc. Also, our survey is completely anonymous, 100% anonymous. So out of those, a lot of people have conscious memories of being aboard a craft, 450. 80% of these individuals have had an out-of-body experience. And that is a very important finding because most of the intimate researchers knew that this was going on, but no one had any idea it was such high percentages. 66%, two out of three, have received telepathic communications from these entities. In terms of the type of entities, we found out that the number one type of being was not the grays, it's the energy being. The energy beings were 55%. The human-looking beings were 54%. So they, in fact, are the most common type of beings that are physically seen by these experiencers. 55% of these experiencers have had missing time. Another very important data, 50% have had a medical healing by this non-human intelligence. Let me repeat that again. 50% have reported a medical healing, either on themselves or a member of their family. Okay. In terms of seeing ETs, if you see them, you're going to see them more than once. The vast majority have seen them more than 10 times. In fact, the category that we selected to identify how many times, most of these people have seen them more than 20 times. Here's another very important factor, the connection between near-death experiences and UFO-related ET contact. 35% of these individuals have had a near-death experience, and that's something that's almost never talked about, that relationship. Let's do some comparisons here. The two types of beings seen by near-death experiencers are exactly the two types of major types of beings seen by in our study. That is the energy being and a human-looking being. Communication. How does communication take place for NDEs? Same thing as UFO-related contact, telepathically, okay? Out-of-body experiences, that's the first phase of a near-death experience. As I said before, 80% of the people have had UFO-related contact have had out-of-body experiences. People get returned from both of these experiences with telepathic skills, with precognition skills. They're able to see energy auras around individuals. Their electronic devices just don't work anymore, okay? These are just a few of the comparative areas that have commonalities between near-death experiences and UFO-related contact. So this is something that no one's talking about, yet our FREE is going to be focusing on that in the very near future to get more in-depth data. Almost 400 people have participated in a quote-unquote alien breeding program. 95% of these experiencers have had some type of paranormal experience. Let me see. 83% of these experiencers believe that these entities are somehow connected to the spirit world, you know, to afterlife, okay, when we die. 83%, huge numbers. And I said before, besides the 85% of these individuals undergoing major transformations for the positive, more spiritual, less egotistical, more concerned for the environment, less concerned for monetary values. Outside of that finding, probably the most important finding that we found, besides all these paranormal aspects of it, is that there appears to be a very strong relationship between near-death experiences and UFO-related contact. And that's just a very brief schematic overview of our research data.
Okay, so you're also trying to continue getting more people involved in this, because you're talking about the stuff that you've already compiled, but there's also a continual opening and invitation to add more people to this equation. Is that not correct?
Correct. Our survey is still ongoing. If your listeners can go to experiencer.org, experiencer.org. We have various menu sections. One are roughly 20 academic articles on the science and physics of consciousness, written for the layperson. This is not for other physicists, but for the average listener. We also have approximately 10 articles on the contact modalities. And that's very important for your listeners to understand, is that our hypothesis, based upon all these scientists in our group, is that we have many different mechanisms or modalities where humans are piercing the veil and having contact with non-human intelligence, near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, mystical meditation, through ayahuasca and other hallucinogens, through channeling, through UFO-related contact, etc. Instead of these topics being interviewed separately and distinctly, our approach is that it's all one phenomenon. As part of the quantum hologram theory of consciousness, that once you're tapping into other dimensions, then you're tapping into all of these different contact modalities. So we have 10 articles on the contact modalities that focus on this relationship, how they're all interrelated. And we also have another menu for titled Research, and that has all of our research study data for phase one and phase two. It has our research methodology for all the different phases, and various articles on academic research of UFO-related contact phenomenon. And then we also have another category called support. FREE has various support programs for experiencers. We have a peer-to-peer support program where we talk to people one-on-one. We also have a therapist support list where we have over 300 individuals from 34 states and over 10 countries that provide support either in support groups, licensed therapists, hypnotherapists, or energy healers.
That's what's a cool thing about this, is that when you hear those numbers of how many people and where they are, it makes it clear that this is a much larger group and a much larger experience than just like seeing a movie of, oh, darn it, Travis Walton, and saying, oh, there's the guy, or Barney and Betty Hill, oh, there's the couple, that's it. It's just, this is going on all over the world, and doesn't matter where you live, you have the potential to have the experience. And when you're combining it with a contact experience, with a channeling experience, with a transcendent kind of spiritual experience, then it changes the playing field completely.
Correct. And these types of phenomenon are rarely discussed in the quote-unquote ufology field. I just want to make it clear to all your listeners that FREE is not a ufology organization. We are not interested in lights in the sky and seeing photos and videos, going out to places where a craft has landed with all these Geiger counters and things like that. Our approach is that we have learned very little over the last 70 years using this nuts and bolts approach. We believe that the vast information has been untapped, and that is the information directly from the experiencer, for example, like the research that we're doing in our study. We also believe that disclosure is not going to happen from the top down, that disclosure is taking place, but it's taking place from the bottom up, from the experiencer. As I said before, we have over 3,000 individuals that have documented their experiences through our research study. We believe that there might be millions of individuals that are out there. The topic that we found out from our data is that the vast majority of these individuals have never told anyone outside of their family of these experiences. We're the first organization or entity that they've actually told these things. Many of these individuals have not even told their brothers and sisters. They might have told their children, their spouses about these experiences. Why? Because the shame and the ridicule once you begin to publicly disclose this phenomenon. So we're trying to create a foundation where people can publicly come out and talk about these experiences, because they're not paranormal. They're actually normal. You have millions of people that are seeing ghosts, millions of people that are experiencing paranormal type of experiences. You talk to almost anyone, Wendy, and I'm sure you know about this, okay? You talk to individuals openly about these things, and roughly one out of every three will tell you a story of either themselves or a member of their family that has seen a ghost, that has seen a UFO, okay, that's had paranormal type of experiences, that's had downloads, has had missing time. You know, these are very, very common phenomena. But the problem is that people are too afraid to publicly discuss them in the open.
Well, I tell you what, in terms of doing my show, it has been so much easier to connect with people having had my own experiences, because I know what kinds of questions to ask. And I'm not, you know, trying to treat someone like a baked potato and ask them a few questions and split them open with the, oh, and by the way, you're nuts. That's just not the way it works. So that part of it, it makes a huge difference when you're talking with somebody who comes at it from the same angle. And it doesn't mean that that I don't have questions that, okay, how did you validate this for yourself? How did you make it credible? What was it that gave you that sense of this is real? Because I know how it worked for me. And because of that, it gives me a better, I think, a vantage point of knowing that there are ways of getting this information and then go back to see, well, what changed with the second encounter and what was different about the third encounter. And sometimes they're completely unique and unrelated things. And you're going, oh, my gosh, there is a connection. That's what's amazing.
That's correct. That's correct. My wife, myself, and my daughter have had these experiences, not only in terms of visually having interactions with physical entities, but also UFO sightings. The vast majority of these experiences occurred over an 18-month period. It was like nonstop, one after another. Since then, for my wife, they've stopped. And for me, like every 6 months, I get a little occasional reminder of something. But it was an 18-month of nonstop experiences. And so that was, I'm grateful for that, because if it just happened to you, then, you know, the natural inclination is, am I going crazy? You know, because it's just you that are having these things.
And that part of it is when you know that you have had something that changed your life and it still happens, no matter what anybody else outside of your personal circle says, then it doesn't matter what others are saying, because it's the amazement that you have with this unique, ongoing, unexplainable anomaly that makes life a whole lot more interesting, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, what I love about Mary Rodwell is that I used the term before, she's the most enlightened of all the individuals working in this field, because Mary throughout, she worked with an individual that was getting a master's degree in Australia. And what he did is he compared people that have had shamanic contact experiences with individuals that have had UFO-related contact experiences. And so this person was the first one to bring to Mary that what we're going through is a shamanic awakening. Initially it's like a purge. You're having all these negative experiences. You're seeing them as in a negative way, but what results is out of this cocoon is a butterfly. It's a total transformation of the individual, and that really is what we're finding, that certain individuals are able to make that transition, the vast majority, but still there's a whole lot of people, basically because of what's in the internet, what's constantly reinforcing them, you know, with all of this misinformation. Okay. And also people go to these UFO conferences expecting answers. Yeah. And all they're getting is the same regurgitation of a BS.
Yeah, that's good.
The same regurgitation of BS when they go to these UFO conferences. And I don't blame these people because they're totally clueless. The reason is that the type of work that was necessary to find out what really is going on was never done. I have an academic background. I went to Cornell for a master's. I went to Berkeley for a PhD. I'm now an attorney. So when these experiences happened to me, after I went to the internet and I saw that it was most of it was BS, or you had thousands of so-called experts and they were all contradicting each other. And, the conclusion is like, what the hell is going on? No one can give me any straight answers. And then once I hooked up with Edgar and Rudy and Mary and some of our other academics, everyone decided that, look, we need to do the first ever study. Comprehensive study of this phenomenon. So, I really don't blame these other people, but please state that, that you're not an expert in this field. You've just interviewed Joe Schmo and Mary Schmo, whatever, and you're making these presentations on their experiences, but don't state like the whole phenomenon is this or the whole phenomenon is that. Even after we're doing all this research with these thousands of individuals, we are still clueless. Everyone in the organization has the position that we're still totally clueless as to what really is going on.
Well, and the part of that keeps you open to actually getting some results, because if you think you know it, then there's conjecture and there's projection, and then you try to extrapolate and say, well, this is a paranormal, this is a spiritual, this is an extraterrestrial, and it can look so similar and yet have a different agenda and a different purpose or basis depending on the personality of the human who's going through this awakening or shift or whatever you want to call it, rearranging of the mind, the consciousness. It's incredible.
Yes. That's as I said before, Wendy, that's the most important finding from our study that we got, is that it's resulted in the complete awakening. Actually, that's the title of Mary's book that she wrote over 10 years ago, titled Awakening. And I recommend for all experiencers, that's the best book for experiencers. It's titled Awakening, Mary Rodwell. So that's the most important finding. But outside of the data that we have, all we have is data. 80% have had out-of-body experiences. 35% have had a near-death experiences. 50% have had a medical healing. So we still have the question is, what the hell is going on?
Okay, I'm going to get back to the thing I raised last segment with John Podesta. His WikiLeaks emails were released, and it has this little conversation with Edgar Mitchell, using the name Edgar Mitchell, saying, we want to connect with Hillary Clinton. And has there been any follow-up with that?
Well, I would consider myself a close friend of Edgar before he passed away. I was at his home over 20 different times. I was at his deathbed, a few days before he died. Edgar, what a lot of people don't know, Edgar worked very, very closely with experiencers, hundreds of experiencers. That side he never publicly revealed, because then it gets even more crazier than the UFO stuff, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he worked very, very closely with experiencers. Also, Edgar had a network where he was in communication with many, many high-profile individuals. We're talking about, military brass, retired generals, all of the retired astronauts, cosmonauts, scientists at all different levels. He even had this group called Quantrac, which had over 15 PhD physicists in it, that he was always in constant communication with them. Edgar, as you know, is the father of the modern disclosure movement, not Stephen Greer, not the other guy, Stephen Bassett. It was Edgar. Edgar was the one that actually brought all of those heavyweights to that Stephen Greer event. And so Edgar also had a lot of intermediaries that would be putting out communications to these other folks, people like John Podesta, to say, look, Edgar is willing to talk to you about these things if you're interested. So Edgar had numerous of these conversations going on all the time. So this information that it was leaked that Edgar was trying to get a hold of Podesta, that's very common.
Well, that's what I liked, the fact that it resonated, that it just said that, based my understanding, was he was so intensely curious and he had his own encounters, his own, that's the school, the noetic sciences, his pursuit was trying to define or examine or further our awareness of what we are doing in our conscious explorations. And as we undergo some kind of evolution, this is part of the process. Jumping through these hoops and hurdles and examining things instead of from the outside going, okay, there I see lights. Well, what is it doing to you? Is it doing something? Is it creating? Is it a trigger? Is it a sign? Is it a cue? There's a whole lot more going on.
Yeah. Edgar, he would tell me all the time. Let me give you a couple of Edgar sayings.
Yeah.
Now that we're talking about him. One thing that he told me, he says, Ray, we know the equivalent of one grain of sand in an entire beach. And then I threw back at him, and that's just one beach, implying the quantum hologram theory of consciousness involves not just one universe or one beach, but almost an infinite amount of universes or beaches. And then he laughed. He says, you're right, Ray. Basically what he was telling us that, Ray, we know squat. Okay. And just to give some background for people on Edgar, Edgar in 1972, he started the Institute for Noetic Sciences. Okay. He also wrote a book in 1972, which was an edited book that had 20 of the world's leading academic scholars on ESP and the paranormal. We're talking about, you know, NDEs, out-of-body experiences, precognition, you know, the whole works. This is 1972, okay? So Edgar was way ahead of everyone else, okay? Edgar also said, Ray, we need to be able to establish friendly relations. He always called them ETs, you know? He says, we need to be able to establish friendly relations with these ETs because we're going to need them in the future. Because the way that we're going as humanity, we're going to be blowing up each other to extinction. Okay.
Yeah. And unsustainable.
Unsustainable development. He even did a video on sustainable development. Okay. That for many, many different topic areas. So Edgar was also pioneering the whole sustainability movement, but also linking the ETs to that sustainability movement, that we need their intervention because at the rate that we're going, we're not going to survive as human beings. And so that in turn leads people to speculate, you know, what might be the agenda of these entities. That if these entities are able to see the rate of progression that we're going in terms of pollution, in terms of the nuclear proliferation all over, you know, the world, in terms of the hostility, in terms of how many people die each year through wars and self-destruction, you know, the chances are that we're not going to survive. So maybe these entities are collecting our genetic makeup, okay, right? They're preserving us to maybe after we blow up the world to bring the genes back, you know, 10,000 years later to repopulate humanity or whatever.
Yeah. But that won't work because it produces the same outcome. It's the same genetic pool you're drawing from. So
correct. That's, so that would be, who knows? So I think what what is needed, what Edgar said, is that we need to be able to understand this phenomenon because we are totally clueless of what is really happening. And then once we get a better understanding, to be able to have some type of relationship with these entities that might be from another dimension. Who knows? You know, because at the rate that we're going as human beings, we're not going to be lasting too long.
Okay, we got 3 minutes left, so I want to wrap up with the things that people can do because they're guaranteed, if somebody listening who has already had two or three of the main criteria for these things that are considered contact and might like to have an option for where to turn and what to connect with to help with, you know, support or at least do some more research about what's going on.
Yes, if you go to experiencer.org, which is our website, as I said before, you'll have various articles to educate yourself about the science and physics of the top leading academics that are studying this phenomenon, what is going on. Secondly, you will have our research data under the research category. And in the research menu, you'll also see a link that says take our survey. So you go to that link, it'll bring you to phase one of our research study survey. If you need someone to talk to, there are many people that are out there that just don't have anyone to talk to. We have various types of support programs. Go to the menu titled support, and you'll see a link to all the different programs. Read about them. We do have 40 volunteers here free. All of them are mature experiencers that have had many, many years of dealing with this phenomenon, and they're there to help you out, to talk to you one-on-one, to provide you support. So it's experiencer.org.
Okay. And you've had a year to get yourself up and running with this organization. How do you feel?
Well, it's a huge task because we're self-funding this this organization. We really need funding in the most important way to continue doing the work that we're doing, our research. Just the SurveyMonkey instruments for the different languages is $300 each. So let's just give you an idea. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a long-term agenda. I mean, after I die, we're still going to be learning what this phenomenon is. And everyone knows that it's a long-term agenda. But at least we're starting to study this scientifically, which is a first step.
Ray, thank you. Ray Hernandez with an amazing organization doing all sorts of interesting things that we really aren't going to be able to give you a summary for, at least at this point in time. Check it out. Find out more if you've had an experience. Share experiencer.org. Thanks for listening. Stay curious.